We're holding.
Was on. You want to close the door?
I don't know. I'm looking for. Lord, I'm going to catch Phil. Oh,
who's that? Next to him, I think.
No.
That's usually there.
You want to close for you?
Yeah, thank you.
Well, you can join us.
All right. Okay, we're holding on a new number of days by the two dots, about 10 lines from the bottom. Yesterday we talked all about Netzel, the liquid that oozes out of her body sometimes and congeals, and the tumor of that. Today we're going to start dealing with the next thing that I talked about in the Mishnah, which is Rokov, where the body decomposes and turns to dust. You know, by the way, the old joke where a kid says to his mother, it says in the Bible that man comes from dust and returns to dust, right? Yeah. And I looked under my bed and it looks like somebody's either coming or going. So the Mishnah said Vamaloy Tavad Rokov, that a nozir would have to shave and bring his karbonis if he becomes tame for a tavad, which is a spoonful of rokov, of his dust. The Kamashir, the Gemara asked. So how much is the shear? Now, what we mean is basically, in other words, what size spoon are we talking about? The first one point out, actually, there's a Mishnah in Kalim that says the size of the spoon. It says it's the large size spoon that doctors use. But evidently, in the time of the Mishnah, doctors used a standard size large spoon. By the time of Amoraim already, it wasn't so clear what size we're talking about. You know, the doctors had changed their procedures a little bit, maybe because of Obamacare or whatever, and now they had different size. Chizki says as much as it takes to fill a handful. Rabbi Yechonon says a double handful.
What do we need a shear?
Same as we need a shear for everything else. Actually, there's an interesting thing. The Tiferes Tzion, one of the Mefarshim on Yerushalmi, points out like this. There's two different ways of explaining the Mechoikos, of understanding what Chizkiya means and what Rabbi Yechonon means. Do they mean, are both of them talking about, Rashi learns that Chizkiya is saying, Meloi Pieces Yad, meaning just what fills up the palm of the hand. Whereas Rabbi Yechonon is saying the whole hand, including the fingers. On the other hand, another way of understanding it is that Chizkiya is saying one handful, and Rabbi Yechonon is saying a double handful. Now, so Tiferes Tzion actually says an interesting thing. It's brought in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. You know, we all know the famous thing that that by Tchias HaMeisim the body is going to be reconstructed from the luz bone. That's why it's important to eat Malach HaMalka, etc. And Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer also talks about the idea that the Eibishter will reconstruct the body from this Meloi Tavad Rokov. There'll be a spoonful, whatever the size the spoon is, of this dust that the Eibishter will reconstruct the body from. There are actually a number of Mefarshim talk about that actually that may be the same thing as the Luz. Like maybe the Luz is part of that Tavad Rokov, or whatever. Whatever it is, then. Okay. Now, if the idea is then that every body, let's say, is going to be built out of one handful of Rokov. It's going to be rebuilt by Tchias HaMeisim. Now, Adam and Chava, we know there's a machloikis, in connection with last week's parasha, that there's a creation of Adam and Chava. Were they created as one person and then separated, or was Adam created alone, and then later on, maybe she took a rib or whatever, some other part of him, and created Chava out of it. So he says, then it's fair to see, and that based on that might be this machloikis of Chizki and Rabbi Yechonon. If you say the Eibishter created Adam first and then Chava, then it means that all you need is one handful to reconstruct. You need one handful, so to speak, that the Eibishter constructed Adam out of in the first place, and then later on Chava was carved out of him. Hashenkin, if you say they were created as two separate beings, just joined together, and the Eibishter split them apart, then you need a double handful.
But it says that he took a rib from Adam.
We learned in Eruvin that Selah, which is the word the Pasuk uses, has a double meaning. It can mean a rib, and the Medrash talks about that. A rib is a hidden area of the body, therefore it represents the idea that a woman should be tzniastik. But the Gemara in Eruvin also mentioned the possibility that Selah can also mean a side, meaning that Adam and Chava were like two Siamese twins, back to back, and the neighbor should cut them apart.
And the connection with the other market.
That's because the luz bone, it says, is only nourished from the Havdalah wine and Malav Malka, therefore it's important to eat those. Anyway. Okay, the Gemara says Tanan, let's consider. We learn in a Braya, in a Mishnah. Tanan usually means a Mishnah. This is actually a Braya, though. Maloy Tagad Rakov Shal. We read a Braya that says there's a spoonful of Rakov, of this dust from a body that we're talking about. Yeshnan Me'ikiret Boris Olamayla. The amount is from the root of the fingers and higher. Divir Meir. That's what Reb Meir says. V'chumran Maloy Chofna. Whereas the Chachamim say a whole handful. Or according to the other way we were understanding it, we could say it means a double handful. No, the root of the fingers, the quarter would mean from here up. That's what we're going to get to in a minute. So, Bishlamid Rabbi Yechanan or Rabbi Rabbanan. Okay, so Rabbi Yechanan, we can understand then. He's saying, like the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan say, he said Maloy Chafnav. The Rabbanan, the Chachamim, are also saying Maloy Chafnav. El Chizkiya, come on, like Rabbi Meir, like Rabbanan. Who is Chizkiya going like? If he says Maloy Pisa Sayyad, which again, according to Rashi, just means the amount that fits in the palm of the hand, then what is it? According to the mayor, it would be me'ikaret boris olamayla, just what's held in the fingers. And then Rabbanan would say it's a whole handful. Or again, according to the other explanation, it would be one versus two, but whatever.
Well, both together.
That's the point, in other words, that we would say that Chizkiya is saying maybe it means a full handful, and Reb Meir is saying a double handful, and Reb Meir is saying only the fingers. But Chizkiya is saying one handful, who is that like? The answer is Amri. They answered, not a problem. Maloy pisa seyada, maloy kishret boris of lemaila chad shiurahu. You could argue that the amount that fits in the palm of the hand versus the amount that fits in the fingers is the same amount. They are about the same size. Depends on the length of your fingers, I guess. But I guess the average size person, it's about the same. So you could say that's that. Amalei Rav Shimi ba Adel Rav Papa, but Rav Shimi ba Adel Aster Papa. I mean, my behind the kishrets ba Oseh Lamaila Lurosh. Who says Bichlal? What's the question in the first place? You're assuming that the kishrets ba Oseh from the knuckles and above means until the tips of the fingers, Lurosh to the tips of the fingers. Maybe it's the other way around. Dermal of Matim Hidei. Maybe it means from the finger from the knuckles. Downward, to have a length like this of a yad, which then amounts to a handful. So then, in other words, you could very easily say that Chizkiya is saying like Reb Meir. Reb Meir is saying, he doesn't mean lamaila as in like you're holding up your hand and it goes from here to the fingertips. No, on the contrary, he's thinking of it as if like your hand is downward, and then lamaila means towards your body. So then that's exactly what Chizkiya is saying.
So then
it may not be an argument. So the Gemara says here, Teiku. Tosfos points out there's no reason for us to say Teiku. We didn't ask a question that we have to leave unresolved. So maybe we shouldn't be good as Teiku. Different Mepharshim talk about different possibilities over here. Maybe Teiku over here means different than it does in the rest of Shas. Maybe it doesn't mean the question is unresolved, but rather the objection stands. Teiku literally means it'll stand. That yes, the objection stands. You have no reason to assume that there's any problem with Chizkiya's opinion. Sfasemes talks about another possibility that maybe, you know, there's other areas in halacha in which it's relevant to know how much fits in a hand also. Way back in the Masechta Shabbos, and we had it once or twice since then, we have a concept of what size stones are you allowed to carry on Shabbos to use for wiping in the bathroom, because they didn't have toilet paper in those days. And it also says, Molot Pisas Ayad. So are we talking about meaning a full handful, or are we talking about just this or just this? So you could say that the Gemara is saying teku, as in we're not sure what it means maloy pisa sayad in other contexts. We're not talking about the Mishnah and Kalim mentions a character named Ben Batiach whose fist was the size of the average person's head. We learned about that in Silka. No, we're not talking about that.
Usually when you don't carry on your fingers, you carry on with.
But it depends. When you hold your fingers, okay, not like that, but when you hold a kiddush cup, you hold it more on your fingers. No, okay, you know. Okay. We learn in a braisa. Ezo mes shiesh le'rokov. What is the kind of mess where the concept of rokov applies? This concept that if you have a spoonful, this tarvot, one or two or half or whatever it is, a handful of this dust from its decomposition, that it makes you chave, and that a nazar has to shave for. What kind of mess would be? Mess shenikva orum. It would have to be the mess was buried without clothes. Ba'oran shel shayish in a marble coffin, oyah gavet ritzpa shel avonim, or on a stone floor. Zeh mes shiesh le'rokav. In that case, that mess is considered to have rokav. However, nikva b'ktusa, if he was buried in his clothes, ba'oran shel eitz, if it was buried in a wooden coffin, oyah gavet ritzpa shel levanim, or on a floor of bricks. Then Rakov does not apply, because in all those cases, not so much it absorbs, but in all those cases, some of the clothing or the wood is going to decay also, and some of the dust from that will be mixed in with the dust from the mess in the case of a... therefore it kind of cancels it out, yeah. In the case of bricks, the problem is either, Rashi says the problem is that there's straw in the bricks, like in Parashat Shmos, when it describes the Jewish people having to put straw in the bricks. So the straw decays, and you have the same problem. Tosfos learns rather that the problem is that bricks more easily, not decay per se, but they more easily rub off. They more easily get ground down, and then some of the dust from that will get mixed in with the mess. The bricks were made from clay. They are nowadays also, but yeah.
So there's still some powder.
The Rambam, by the way, adds that by the same token, if it is buried in a metal coffin, you have the same issue. There's no rock. But again, some of the metal rusts and gets mixed in with it. On the other hand, the Rambam says it doesn't just have to be marble. If the mess was buried in a glass coffin, same thing. Glass is inert. You're not going to have any bits of it breaking off and mixing with the rock. Oma Ola. This that we're talking about over here, that the Rakov has to be, that's not mixed with anything else, like we're saying over here with the Tachrichim or what have you, that's actually only when we're talking with the original formation of the Rakov. There is a Mishnah in Arlos that talks about, and the Gemara discusses it in Nidya a bit, Tosis quotes it over here, what happens later on if you take some earth from a cemetery, which is probably a mix of Rakov from the bodies, and earth that was there to begin with. Then you have a machlokas of the Chachamim and Reb Shimon, whether a certain amount of it, more than a tarvah's worth, will be metaliyu. According to the Chachamim, yes, because they say, assuming there was an original tarvah rock over there, the fact that now, later on, it gets mixed in with the surrounding dirt doesn't matter so much. So you need a little more than a tarvah in order to make sure you have a tarvah's worth from the mess, but then it's still metaliyu. According to the different explanations we just had. Whereas according to Reb Shimon, even in that case, it's also tahor, because once there's something, the same way he says, as the original formation of it has to be without anything else mixed in, the same way later on, if it's mixed in with something else, it's not the time. Oma Ola, in Rakov el abom min abosu min agidim min atzomis. It's only considered Rakov if it comes from the flesh, from the gidim, which gidim is a wide term. It includes ligaments, it includes nerves, it includes blood vessels. Well, min atzomes and from the bones. There has to be from all three of them, in other words, to be considered rakov. Esved Rav Lola, so Rav asks Lola, what do you mean? The Braitha says, rakov abomina basar tar. Rakov that comes from the flesh is tar. In other words, it's not metamayu. Which seems to imply that rakov that comes from only a bone is tomei va'afagav like a baso, even if there's no flesh on it. The answer is no. Ula would answer no. Ema hachi. What the braita means is rakov abomin abaso tahar, that rakov that comes only from the flesh is tahar atchiyesh etzim babaso, unless they're not flesh as opposed not flesh only as opposed to bare bones, but flesh by itself as opposed to flesh on a bone. There has to be both. Defer to the Mitame. Yeah. Question is still is whole like a gidim. Fine. But Ula said before you need Boster and Gidim and Atzama. It's fine. If you only have Boster and Atzama, where's the Gidim? The answer is okay. He actually Boster lots of us below Gidim. Practically speaking, you can't have Gidim include the ligaments that connect the flesh to the bone. No. So without those, you're not going to have Boster and Atzama.
Gidim are the tendons. They're not the veins.
That's what I'm saying. Gidim has many different meanings, but for our purposes, gidim is, you know, when you, I mean, think of when you, I mean, we're talking about human remains, but it's, you know, the same thing, much the same anatomy is true of animals as well. I mean, when you eat a steak, for example, you know, you have these tough things that connect the meat to the bone, unless it's well cooked, like in a cholent or something. You know, that's what we're talking about. Okay, so then the question still is, so why did Ula have to mention Gidim? So the answer is, Tosfos says that Ula would say that, for example, we talked yesterday about the case of a nafel, a stillborn baby, where the flesh, the muscles are not really connected with Gidim to the bones yet. So then Ula would say that there's no Rakov from that. Whereas the Braisa with that the point of him mentioning Gidim, in other words, is you have to have it has to be from a human that was matured enough to have Gidim connecting the Basar to the Atzamos. Whereas the Braisa would be disagreeing with that. The Braisa would be saying that the Braisa just mentioning Basar and Atzamos might be implying that even by a Nafal it's Medamah.
But they're not from the same source.
No, so in other words, what Tosfos says is the Braisa is not dealing with that detail. The Braisa is assuming that we're talking about a fully formed person. Therefore, it has only reason to mention Basar and Atzamos because that automatically implies Gidim. Ula wants us to know, but you should know, in a case where there are no Gidim, for example, a stillborn baby that hasn't developed much yet, then in fact there's no Raka. Amar of Shmuel ba'Abba Amar of Yechanan. Shnei mesim shekaver on zeim zeh. If you have two mesim that are buried together, nasu gilgalin zeh lazeh. They become gilgalin one to the other. So what's gilgalin? And the Mefarshim have several different explanations what it means. Rashi says gilgalin is meloshin gilgal. If you have stuff rolling around, like moving around from one to the other. Just like we said before that a mess, for example, is buried in Tachrichim and the din of Rakov does not apply. This whole concept of Rakov, Bechlal, is that the reason why we have so many limitations on it is the whole concept of Rakov is something unusual anyway. Usually, in most areas in Halacha, we talked yesterday, for example, in connection with Tumas Nevelos, for example, and most other areas in Halacha, once something has become dust, then it's not considered the original stuff anymore. So why should dust from a mess be Metameh anyway? It's Halacha Meshmitzinai that it is. So therefore, there's some very specific criteria. That's what we're saying, that it can't have been mixed with anything else, when it was first formed, etc. But now what we're saying is, if you have two mason that are buried together, then each one, some of the rocko from one mixes with the other one, and therefore it's not considered rocko anymore. Therefore, it doesn't have the halacha of rocko. Several other explanations of what gugula means. So therefore, it wouldn't be metame, exactly.
Although it's human remains.
That's the point. In other words, it's rakov. By rights, by any logical thing, no amount of rakov should mean the time of you anyway. It's only halacha meshmi sinai that does. The halacha meshmi sinai is only when it's rakov from one individual mess without anything else mixed in. That's Rashi says. Yeah, even if they were both buried without clothes in marble and marble, then there for sure wouldn't be anyway. But we're talking about even if individually each of them is buried without clothes in a marble oven, but afterwards you mix them together, then it's rakov that comes from two mason, and we're saying that's not matane.
What about a mason and animal?
It's for sure not then. Sure. Yeah. So actually, no, it's not if they were mixed afterwards. So mixed afterwards, that's what the Gemara is going to deal with too. We're talking about, let's say you have two mason, both of them were buried in one marble urn without clothes. Nevertheless, because the rakov mixes to begin with, when they're both decaying, then therefore it's not metamin. And that's Rashi's explanation of Gilgalin. Tosfos brings a couple of other ones. That Gilgalin also has a meaning of like something that cancels out something else, that each of them sort of cancels out the other one. Another explanation from the Aruch is that Gilgalin means something like that covers something else, like it's sort of rolled around it, kind of Meloshon Galgal. So therefore, the same way as Tachrichin, for example, are rolled around the body, and therefore they prevent the concept of Rakov from taking place, so also over here, if you have two mason buried together. Yeah, you want to see on that. So now we're going to be discussing a little bit this concept of Gilgalin, this concept that when you have something else mixed together with those, when you have something else combined together with the mess, and both of them decay together, whether the concept of Rakov applies or it doesn't. So we started that Rav Shmuel Ba'aber, Shimon Ba'aber, it says on the side, it said in the name of Rav Yechanan, that two mason become Gilgalin for each other, so therefore the Rakov from neither of them is atomic. Master Rav Nassim, so Rav Nassim says, I have a contradiction for that from a Braita. Rakov Abami Beis Mason Tomei. If you have a Rakov that comes from two bodies, is Mekame. Amar Rava, so Rava says that's different. Shekavar is Zebifne Asmei, Zebifne Asmei. That's talking about where you bury each one separately, again, without Tachrichim, in a metal, in, not metal, in a marble or glass or whatever coffin. You bury each one separately. New kibbu of amdram alaytavad rokav, and then they decayed, and it winds up each one of them. All there's left is all there's left between the two of them. When you put it back to when you take, now you have some rokav from one, some rokav from the other, and then you combine it. Then you have a rokav. Then you have one full tavad. So since the point would be, in other words, since each one was buried alone, then the rakav from them has the status of rakav and halacha. The fact that there was less than a tithe of it, okay, that means it's not metame yet. But it's still, so to speak, chozer v'nir. It's able to be reactivated when you have more rakav that it gets mixed in.
So having that mixed together?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. The two bodies were buried separately, each of them in their own coffin, so the rakav doesn't mix.
They're decomposed separately.
Later on, somebody took some rakav from one and some rakav from the other and mixed them, and it ended up being a tavan. Tosfos points out, I mean, the Gemara didn't really have to say that each of them wound up being less than a tavan. I mean, by the same logic, you could say the same thing if each one of them is two or three tavadim, for example, and you mix some of one and some of the other. The chiddush is, though, that even if each one of them, even if they've decayed so much that all there is left is a half a tithe from one and a half a tithe from the other, that's already enough. Because they were buried together to begin with. So therefore, when the rakav was formed, it got cancelled out by something else that was mixed in.
They
were buried together, though, and that's what he said. That's what the Gemara is trying to figure out over here. There's a difference whether they decomposed together, even though it was in one coffin, Arumin, or whether it was they decomposed separately and afterwards you took Rakav from one and Rakav from the other one and then blended them together. Yeah, of course. Goza cider the cover of him. What happens if you cut the mess's hair and then bury that hair together with it? Not so like Gilgalin. That hair also counts as Gilgalin, meaning it cancels out the possibility of Rakav. Even if everything else is valid, you have the Nikbar Orem, the Orem Shoshayish, but because there's that cut hair that was buried with him, which eventually decomposes also, then there, I guess. It's organic. Does hair decompose? Yes, I mean it's organic material. Yeah, it's made from protein after all. Okay, whatever. I mean, look, sometimes you have, they also find bodies that are still more or less intact after thousands of years if they were buried in bogs or whatever.
In dry climates,
and then in different kinds of climates, all kinds of odd things can happen. But whatever, we're talking under normal circumstances. Like I was mentioning yesterday, if you really want more details, there's an outfit in Tennessee that you can call up and ask for. They have a forensic lab over there where they do a lot of study of how bodies decompose under many different conditions. Okay, I've read about it. Something more says, okay, let's consider it. Let's relate something else to this. Tananhos, and we learn the mission in all this. Kol shav mes tomei, everything of a mes's body is tomei, that is, the tomei, a person who touches it, who is under the same oil, etc. Chutz min hashinayim v'aseir v'atziporin, except for teeth and hair and nails. Or v'shach chiburin kolim tomei, and however, if they're still attached to the body, then all of them are tomei as well. The Gemara in Nidah explains the reason behind it is We learn from Sukkim, we learn from the expressions that the Sukkim use, that the etzim adam of the cover, whatever, that it has to, in order for something to be metame, it has to be something which was originally formed together with the person. When the person was born, he already had it. And if it's removed, it's not going to regenerate. So hair and nails regenerate. The person is born with hair and nails, but they regenerate. You cut your nails, you cut your hair, and they grow back. And teeth, you're not born with. Therefore, those three things are excluded. So if the teeth are extracted from so you have, for example, a mess, and then the hair is cut off, or the teeth are extracted, or what have you, then they're not metame. But if they're still attached to the body, then they are metame.
Teeth don't grow back. So.
That's the point. No, teeth don't grow back, but they're not born with you. You're not born with teeth. Most people aren't, anyway. The Gemara in Brachos, by the way, mentions that Rabbi Yochanan had ten children, and all of them died in his lifetime, and he used to carry around a tooth, or he used to carry around, actually, the Gemara says, a bone from one of them, but Tosfos, I think, says it was a tooth. So that to show people, like when people were sitting shiva or whatever, he would be able to comfort them. Like, you know how it's a cliche to say, I know what you're going through, but a person could really say that, basically. And he would show them that, look, you know, this is all I have left for my 10 children, but I still accept the Eibishter's judgment. So Tosfos points out, or other Mefarshim point out, but that has to be based on this Gemara over here. The truth is not Matame. Otherwise, how is Rabbi Yechanan carrying around something that would make him Tame? And while they get into a discussion whether the teeth need to be buried, that's a whole other discussion anyway. But Bishas Chiburim, if they're attached to the body, are called Kulin Tmeim. So Boy Chizkia. So now Chizkia asks a question. Sorei Ha'Oved LeGaleach. What if you have hair on the nest that was going to be cut? Meaning, the Rosh says, people would in those days grow their hair to a certain more or less standard length and then cut it. So yeah, the person has gone more than that amount of time before his last haircut. Usually, if he was alive at this point, he would be ready to take a haircut, but he hasn't yet, and then he died. Or Tziporin HaOmed LeGaleach, or what if he has fingernails that were about to be cut? My, so what would be the din? Me and Rin and Kala HaOmed LeGaleach KeGaleach Dami, do we say that anything that is ready to be cut off is considered as if it's already cut off? Or fact is right now they're attached. Now, what exactly is Chizkiah's question? Tosfos mentions two possibilities. One is that Chizkiah could be asking about related to this din that we just had from the Sechta Olos, that, for example, the hair is metame as long as it's still attached to the body. So Chizkiah is asking, is that only, for example, the short hair, or is it even if the hair is longer than it would normally be? Same thing with the fingernails. Or the other way of looking at it, that Tosfos mentions a second possibility although Tosfos doesn't like this explanation, that Chizkiah is asking as far as this question of jubilum that we just discussed. If a mess were to be buried with hair longer than usual, if it was cut, then for sure Rabbi Chana said that it's jubilum. But if it's not cut, but it's longer than usual, it would have been cut, same thing with the fingernail, do we say that the concept of rakov then doesn't apply because you have jubilum? Okay, the Gemara says,
even if it's still attached.
Even if that's the question. It's still attached, but it was about to be cut off. But normally, a person who has fingernails beyond a certain length, they will be cut. Same thing with hair. So you could argue then that maybe it's considered as if it's already cut. But actually, there's other places in Shas that the Gemara deals with this kind of question also, whether something that's going to be cut off is considered as if it is. We have Mephoshim talk about why the Gemara doesn't bring in that whole discussion over here, but anyway, yeah. The Gemara asks, the Nifshit, I mean, Abba Baba Chana. Fine, why can't we answer the question based on what Rabbi Baba Chana said? He said that if you cut off the hair, then it's jugulin, which implies time of mishum de gozaz, only because you cut it is it jugulin, holy gozaz light. But if not, then obviously it's not jugulin and still counts towards the rakav. Or, according to Tosfos' first explanation, that obviously it still counts like it's part of the body and therefore it's mitame if you touch it. The answer is no. No, because you could say Rabbi Baba Chana is asking, is saying like this, Gozav has a gilgulim. There's no question if you cut the hair, for sure it's gilgulim, and Rakov does not apply then. But the question would be, what if he didn't cut it? Not that Rabbi Baba Chana is saying as a fact that if he didn't cut it, then there's no gilgulim. He's not sure. So fine, then in that case, then Chizkiah can be asking the question on that basis.
Gilgulim is when he's cut
when the gilgulim, that's what I'm saying. Gilgulim is when you have some foreign material together with the body, which forms rakov.
Yes.
So if we have cut off hair, that's for sure gilgulim, considered foreign material. We could argue that Rabbi Baba Chana might mean, even if the hair is still attached, if it's longer than it usually would be, so it was about to be cut, and then the person died, maybe it's still considered gilgulim. Maybe then no rakov.
But it's still attached.
Yeah, that's the question. You could look at it either way. But Rabbi Yirmiyah. Now Rabbi Yirmiyah asks another question. Rakov abomina hakev, Mahu. What if you have rakov that comes from the heel? What would be the din? Now, what do we mean by the heel? Rashi explains we don't just mean the heel. We mean everything from the waist down. Because the point is, Rashi says, maybe the concept of rakov only applies to parts of the body that are necessary for a person's life. Anything below the waist, a person can live with their legs amputated, rahman al-Islam. So maybe, therefore, it's not considered really, in that sense, part of the body. Tosfos learns that we're actually talking about the actual heel. You have like calluses on the heel. Tosfos uses the expression she'en v'chayus. There's no life in the heel. This is one of the sources for the famous idea that's brought in many places in Siddur, like the Arkev, is the lowest and coarsest and crassest part of the body. We're saying over here it doesn't even have any chayus in it. On the other hand, it's the mesudas nefesh part of the body, because it'll go where the head tells it to.
It has, you cannot walk without an eker.
Now, we're not talking about the whole eker. We're talking about like a callus that forms over there, like a stick. A stick.
What do you call an eker?
That's what we're talking about over here. We're talking about the thick skin. We're not talking about the thin skin that you need. We're talking about when it develops into a thicker skin.
The dead skin of the
okay, but it has less chayus than the rest of the body, basically. I mean, obviously it has some chayus, otherwise it would decay.
But
you can't live without it. And you could. Of course, you can live without a hole for it. But whatever, yeah. It's interesting, the Gorbachev quotes in this connection of a medrash that calls the heel the malach hamavos of the body. And he says that's based on our Gemara over here, the Malachamavas of the body. And he relates it also to the last spousal chete fadas, that's why the Eibishter tells the Nachash that you're going to be able to strike human beings in the heel and kill them. Why? Because the idea is, what are Adam and Chava trying to do? They're trying to get at the eighth adas, which is not something they need for their survival. They just they got a curiosity or whatever, all the different possible reasons are, they didn't need it. So therefore the Eibishter says, therefore they're going to be punished in a part of their body that, so to speak, you don't need as much. It doesn't have any chayus. But you went to try and get something that you didn't need for your chayus, therefore you're going to be punished through something that doesn't have chayus.
The heel is the actual...
Yeah, the Achilles heel or whatever.
Of the body.
So, yeah. Okay. So, anyway, so Rokav Abomin HaOkav now. Mi Gamlin and Rokav Abomin Kulameis. Do we learn Halacha Meshmei that Rokav applies only if it comes from the whole body, but maybe not the heel? Maybe there's no difference. Serious Mepharshim talk about, is the Gemara asking over here if the Rokav comes only from the heel? Or are we talking about, are we asking if the Rokav comes from the whole body, including the heel? In other words, basically, two ways of looking at it is, the question is, can Rokav from the heel help make up the Tarvad? Or is it, if you have, for some reason, only the heel decomposed, would that be considered Rokav? A tablet is a large spoon. We talked about at the beginning the size of it. It's a handful, a double handful, a half a handful, whatever. That's the minimum amount you need for it to be metallic.
I'd say
the tablet is a large spoon. So that's what Gemara is asking. Toshma, the Tanya of Nothing Riboshi, we said before, Rock of Abomishne Mason Tommy, that Rock of that comes from two Mason is metallic, which we said before. That's where each one decayed on its own and then you mix them together. Now, the Isakudata Habamin Akiv Loy, if you're going to tell me that Rokav from the heel is not considered Rokav, Zilhacha, Jilmaderach Akiv Kasi, so then when you look at one mess, maybe the Rokav began from the heel and worked its way up through the body. And the other one also, maybe a decayed starting from the heel and working its way up. So how do you know? In either one of them, the half a tarvod or whatever that you're dealing with over here, is b'chol, considered rakov. So it must be, obviously, that rakov from the ekev is considered rakov just as much as from any other part of the body. But it's not necessarily. Either ekev cooling mess, v'chol, derech ekev, hokinami. No, if the whole body together decayed, and now you're wondering which end the decay started from first, from the heel or from the head, then fine. You're right. It doesn't really matter. Rokav from the Akev would be considered just like anything else. Elohacha can get the Irkiv Chad Ezer. See, we're talking about that. Let's say only one limb decayed, because you get a Akev. So now you now the question is whether that particular limb, did it start from the heel and work its way up or not? So what would be the din? Teku. With that said, even though the Gemara leaves it as teku, the Rambam actually leaves out this whole discussion about Rokav Abomin HaEkev. It seems that the Rambam does not make a distinction between the Akev and the other part of the body. There's various before we can talk about different possible reasons why. Part of it is because there's a number of different Amudoyim in the Gemara over here with all different kinds of opinions about when Rokav applies and when not. And the Rambam may hold that much of this discussion is not necessarily a liber de hilchos. It's not according to the final halacha. Therefore, the Rambam that's the point. In other words, according to the Rambam, it might not make a difference. It seems it doesn't make a difference what part of the body the Rokav came from. Any part of the body is on an equal level. That seems, that's how the Rambam asks it in Hilchos Tumas Masechta. Okay. Boy Rabbi Yomi, and now Rabbi Yomi asks the question, what if a woman passed away while she was pregnant and the baby is buried together with her, still in her womb? Have a gilgalim alay. Do we apply, do we say that the baby and the mother are gilgalim to each other, therefore no rakav, or not? Do we say, we say usually that a fetus is considered like a limb of the mother. This has applications in a number of areas in halacha. Hilchach gufahu, therefore it's considered part of her body, but I have a gilgalim, therefore it's not gilgalim. The rakav from her is considered full-fledged rakav. A gilgalim given to Seifa Lotzis, or maybe since eventually it's going to come out of her body, mifash parish, we know that it's considered even now as though it's separate from her. The imtim saloima over the Seifa Lotzis mifash parish, we know. Okay, so you might answer, fine, let's say that, yes, let's say that a baby is considered a separate entity. So that's the first thing to talk about. That's whether Rabbi Yomi is making is working on the same assumptions as Rava Bava Chana before in connection and as Rava Bava Chana and Chizkiya before in connection with the hair or not.
It's more body than the hair is.
Yeah, but after all, it's going to end up being a separate body. The hair is never going to end up being a separate entity.
Oh, but with a child, it's the umbilical cord. Does that make a difference? Because until the umbilical cord is cut,
No, but that's the point. We're saying, given the social losses, that eventually it's going to come out. It's going to become a separate entity of its own, a separate human being. Therefore, maybe even now, it's considered as though it's a separate thing.
No, and the question, I guess...
I understand, it's connected by the umbilical cord, but still, I mean, that's the question. Do we consider it to be a part of the mother, or maybe not?
What happens if a person is adopted didn't cut the umbilical cord? What happens?
When the placenta comes out, where the umbilical cord? I mean, then they still separate.
No, Okay, the intim saloma over the cipher lost its mifresh body. You know, okay, so you might answer, yes, a baby is considered to be a separate entity because eventually it will come out. Well, let's continue with the question. Shichvas zera b'mei shamari. What if you have a woman who had shichvas zera in her womb when she was buried? Now, how would that be? Rashi says, for example, she's a bas banim. She's a fertile age. You would tend to assume then that she has shichvas zera, that she had relations not long, or Rashi says maybe that, yes, not long before she passed away, we know that she had relations, let's say. So again, miyam rinan kimen dolo itzer, since we, on the other hand, we could argue it's different than a baby. It hasn't even been formed into a baby yet. Maybe it has no chshivus, kigufa dami. Maybe it's considered like part of her body. A gilma kimen dolo alma kaasi loy. Or maybe it comes from somewhere else. It comes from her husband. Or whoever, then maybe not. Maybe it's considered a foreign. Maybe it's considered a foreign object.
Or you can have an egg and shichvas zera that is combined.
But that's the question. Well, an uber in halacha usually is only considered an uber if more than 40 days have passed since conception. I mean, if you just have a newly fertilized egg, then that's not really going to be any different than shichvas zera for all purposes. But whatever, it's not itzer. It hasn't been. It doesn't have the form of a baby yet. Boy, the papa, Pirshama, who now the papa asked another question. What about her waist? What about her waist? That she would have gone to the bathroom later and then that would have come out? Now, this obviously is not relevant only to a woman. That you could ask the same question about a man as well. But we're talking about women. We're talking, in connection with pregnancy and whatever, so therefore the Gemara continues on that. On the one hand, Kivin Deloy Mekaima B'Deloy Ochla, since a person can't live without eating, chayusaru, so it's considered an essential part of her body that's necessary for life. Or maybe no, also not. It's something that comes from the outside, and eventually it's going to come out again. So therefore, maybe it's not considered part of her body. And what about his ur? Now, ur usually means skin, but that's a many Mephoshim ask, I mean, so what's the question? I mean, of course the skin is part of the body. So to start with, Rashi says that the gusa over here is not oiroi, but rather a-oiroi. A-oiroi is Meloshin, we're going to have an expression like this in Sota in a few weeks, ma'aroi noisa. Like if the Sota, in certain cases, doesn't want to drink the May Sota, you sort of make her swallow it. Ma'aroi noisa, like you make her swallow it. So therefore a-oiroi would mean sort of like the phlegm or the spit that comes out of a person, not like you have to cough it up hard, but like you gargle a little bit and then some of it comes up, like some of the mucus from the throat. So then the question would be, again, is that considered part of the body or not? with the gusa that we have over here, oroi. So there are some other mephoroshim say that maybe the gusa instead of oroi should be sairoi, the hair, and then essentially it's going over the what we talked about before on Amud Aleph about hair. And then according to the gusa that we have over here, as far as skin, the Rosh talks about the possibility, the Gemara, there's a question. Is the skin of a person, if it's separated from the body, is it tamei midaraisa or only midrabanan? So then we could be talking about over here something similar to that. If the body was skin, for example, is the skin considered to be like the hair before, where we said that if once it's separated from the body, then midaraisa, it's not tamei anymore? Or maybe not. Maybe it's considered a more central part of the body. We know that I mentioned yesterday or the day before. I mentioned yesterday in connection with Nitzoik, a couple of Mishnayos and Yadayim that mention a bunch of discussions between the Tzedukim and the Prushim, the Chachamim. One of them was on the question of Nitzoik. Another one was the Chachamim had a discussion with Tzedukim. Basically, it started with a discussion. How come the Tzedukim asked? How come it is you say that Kisvei HaKodesh are metame your hands, the books of Tanakh? And where Sfarim, for example, the books of Homer or books of Minim or whatever are not. Akisvei the Chachamim end up answering them, l'chubasim hein tumasim. That the more precious something is, the more the tumah of it is. For example, you want to say, for example, human bones are metame, animal bones are not. Why? Because you don't want a person to take his parents' bones and make them into spoons. They used to make spoons and other silverware and other tableware in those days out of bone, animal bone usually, but conceivably you can use human bone. You don't want a person to take his parents' bones and use them for that. Therefore the Torah says they're tamei. And the same thing with Kisvei HaKodesh, Lefichi Basin Angel Moss. And that's not the real reason. The Gemara and Shabbos explains the real reason. Anyway, there is this concept that the Chachamim were concerned that you don't want people, like, they're so attached to their parents or other close relatives that, like, they're going to take body parts of them and use them as things around their house.
Yeah,
so one of
One
of them is, for example, the Gemara, the Mishnah and the Gemara talk about in Chulin that the skin of an animal that was tanned beyond a certain point is not considered tumas, doesn't have tumas nevela anymore. But human skin is always metame. And why? Because the Chachamim didn't want that a person is going to take human skin and use it, for example, for rugs or what have you. But that's the question. In other words, that particular detail was only the Rabbanan after it was tanned. But the original skin, is the whole concept that the skin is metame only the Rabbanan, or is it the skin is metame deraisa? If you were to tan it, then it wouldn't be metame anymore. But the Chachamim said that it's still metame.
Where would be the hint? Deraisa?
For the part of the body. It's the same way as we said on Amud Aleph. We learned from based on what it says in Nida over there, that anything that you were born with and that doesn't regenerate, is metame, to a very limited extent. I mean, very outer layers of the skin, maybe, not any deeper than that.
Anything you're born with that...
Anything we're born with that doesn't regenerate.
It doesn't regenerate.
Is metame, even if it's separated from the rest of the body. Bones, muscle, blood. Again, to a certain very limited extent. If you lose a limb, that limb is not going to regenerate.
A Kohen in his lifetime has Kedusha Seguf,
yep.
Correct? Then because of the higher level of Kedusha of a Kohen, in a Kohen's passing, is the body more metame?
No.
There's no difference in the gender.
No difference in that.
Now, but with the hair of another, the hair of another is also, there's a Kedusha of,
right.
Of the hair itself. So would another, let's say another Olam, like Shampun, passes away,
the whole body has to be buried, so the hair also is buried along with it. That's what we said before. If it's attached, then everything is metame and everything needs to be buried.
Okay, but before the hair keeps growing after a person's death.
No, it doesn't, actually. The skin shrinks a little bit, so sometimes it appears that the hair is a little longer and the nails are a little longer than they were before, but no, they don't. How could they grow after?
That's what I thought.
Nah.
Oh, no?
Okay. All right, let's continue.
Does
it? Okay, yeah. I think we're getting macabre enough as it is. Yeah. Okay. So these are the different possibilities, what the Gemara means by oyrei. And another one, what about the person's saliva or mucus? So we said yesterday, Tosfos learns that niyoy rather is phlegm. So again, are those considered gilgalin or not? Okay, after all these questions, I'm like, Shulam Ba'achal or a Papa, the Yisak would have a Kohani to come and have a Gyurulin. Fine, let's say we assume that all these things we mentioned so far, the Teresh and the skin or the phlegm or the mucus or the whatever, all these different things, if you're going to say that they're all considered Gyurulin, Rokhav de Matame, Echem Ashkachasla. Realistically, how are you going to ever have a case of any mess that would have a Rokhav? I said, okay, you could find a case. The Ashkia Medikolin, suppose that before the person died, you gave him to drink Medikolin, which is, we learned way, way back in Shabbos, a couple of years back, it's a spring between two palm trees somewhere in Eretz Yisrael. This water from the spring, I guess some kind of mineral water, I guess, has very strong cleansing effects on the body. You drink a couple of cups of it, and your insides are completely cleaned out. So there's no perish left then. So you give him that to drink. The sachin nasha, you smeared the body with nasha, which is a chemical that removes the hair. The shulka the meitveria, and then you boiled him in meitveria. The different mafarshim talk about exactly what each of these things accomplishes, but the gist of it is by the time you're left with that, the body has no hair, because the nasha took care of that, no skin, because the meitveria took care of that. Tosis points out that you actually have to do the meitveria would have to be before the nasha, because otherwise the nasha only gets the part of the hair above the skin. It doesn't get the roots that are embedded in the skin. So the major column take care of the peresh and also the kiyach and also the kichay veneer, the phlegm and mucus and whatnot. Different other proportions talk about different slight different variations in those, but whatever. That's what it amounts to. Again, by the way, the Rambam leaves out all of this, which means that the Rambam evidently assumes that this is all of what we call a shenuya d'chikah. It's like a very, very forced answer to say that Rokov only applies in such a case, and therefore the Rambam leaves these out and just takes it as a given that Rokov, you do need, like we said on Amud Aleph, that the body was buried without clothes and in a coffin that doesn't decompose. But other than that, the rest of these details over here, as long as the body was buried whole, which is the next thing we're going to talk about, then Rokov applies. Amar Abaye, Naktinan, we have a tradition, the Kabbalah, Mes Shetochnei, if you took a mess and ground it up, Eimai Rokov, then Rokov does not, that's not considered Rokov. Rokov is when the body decomposes and becomes a powder naturally, not when you ground it up into a powder. Interesting thing, by the way, a few hundred years ago, it used to be a common thing. They would take, they would export mummies from Egypt, and it was believed in those times, 400 or 500 years ago, that these mummies had medicinal powers. And maybe to a certain extent, I guess, with all the resins and oils and whatnot that they used to embalm them to begin with, maybe there was something. Anyway, they used to export mummies, and people would grind them up and use them as medicines. The Radvaz has a whole shuvah about whether you're allowed to take such medicine. Forget about Avodah Zarah, maybe. I mean, the mummy itself is not an Avodah Zarah, but are you allowed to do it if it's covered a mess? Are you allowed to have an awful mess like that? Anyway. It was obviously good, yeah. They were the ones who were involved, yeah. These days, archaeologists would be horrified at the idea. They want every one of them preserved so they can study them, but yeah. So now the Chachamim had a question based on this. Tochnei v'chozavik. Okay, what if you take a body and grind it up, and then that ground up powder starts decaying and becomes, so to speak, natural rokov? Last midi hutai. So the question is, midi hutai me eladikah basa v'gidim batzam. Is the underlying reason that is the underlying consideration? You have to have, as we said on Amud Aleph, you have to have that the rokov comes from a full thing, from a full set of flesh and gidim and bones, and in that case you have all that, it's all ground up, but still the original constituent parts are still there. Or maybe the body has to be in its original state, and it's not, because it was ground up. Okay, cool. This one that Amam does bring, that is a Sufik, whether it's Metamon. Another din in connection with Rokov, Tani Ola Bachanina, Mes Shechoser, a mess which is missing something that some part of it is missing after the death. This is similar to what we talked about last week in connection with a Kohen becoming Tomei for close relative, that he can only be Zmanshu Sholem, but Zmanshu Choser, not if something is missing after death. Here we're talking about a similar concept. So if a mess is missing something after death, and what we're talking about that has to be missing, by the way, is Machloikas Rishonim. Rashi says that we hear Kol Shehu, even if any amount is missing. Tosfos seems to say, meaning that, in other words, the body was the other. No, in other words, that the body, the person died before the body was buried, and started decomposing, some part was removed. Rashi seems to be saying any part. The Rambam also says any part, because, for example, the Rambam says that a person who was killed, there's no rock of, because some blood is missing from him. On the other hand, other Rishonim say that it has to be something, has to be Avish on a Shama Kluya, right? It has to be a limb that the person's life would have depended on. Anyway, Engel Rokov, so unless it's missing something, the concept of Rokov does not apply. And Tosfos says, I don't understand why not. He says, okay, it must be Allah HaMashiach, right?
And then, if that's the case, what about the record, whether the record has to be included or not? Apparently, here we see that there's something missing.
No, what we're saying is, in other words, so before, after the death, before the burial, a toe was cut off, let's say, or, you know, according to the Mefarshim who say that it needs to be Avish on a Shama Tluya Bo, let's say, you know, the heart was cut out or something. And then the mess was buried and saying, Ein Leirakov.
Same thing applies to the heel.
No, because again, the heel can be cut off. So that gets back to the discussion before, whether the Gemara meant to ask whether Rokov from the heel by itself, or whether we meant that it counts towards death. And that's actually, some of the said that that's why the Rambam didn't bring the whole business about the heel, given that we're saying over here the mess has to be whole, that obviously the heel was included in. So Amy Rokov, Veloit Tfusa, also to a mess that's missing something, the concept of Tfusa does not apply. Tfusa we'll talk about towards the end of the Masechta. It's the concept that if you're moving a body from one place to another, a body was buried in one place and then you're reburying it someplace else, which for various reasons in Halacha you're allowed to do, then you have to take some of the dirt from underneath it along with it. That's called Tfusa. So if the mess is missing something, then the concept of Tfusa does not apply. And also the concept of shchunas kvoris. Shchunas kvoris basically means a graveyard. Again, we're going to learn about it in the last perek that talks about a case where you're digging and you land and you find mason buried over there. Where if it's not arranged in the form of a cemetery, then you're allowed to move the bodies. But if it's a cemetery, if there's a certain distance between the mason and they're buried in a certain pattern, then you're not allowed to. It's called a shchunas kvoris. It's called a cemetery, a graveyard. Three graves, and they have to be a certain distance apart, et cetera, yeah.
So you're not allowed to
move them, in that case, right. So, again, if the mess is missing some part of them, then these three dinim do not apply.
So are we saying that, for example, if a body were to, after the...
Left. After the death, yeah.
After the death, let's say a thumb was cut off.
That's what we're saying.
But the body is obviously still metame.
Body is metame. We're talking about rock. We're talking about the dust that eventually forms from it, whether that's metame.
So when, how long does that take? Is there a gray area between where it's...
No, it's when you have the body itself still intact, or do you just have dust? Tosfos discusses the possibility that maybe if the severed limb was buried together with the person, maybe there is Rokov after all. Maybe Rokov only applies if that limb or whatever it is that was cut off did not end up being buried together with the person. That's Tosfos' opinion. I don't believe mentions that detail. I don't remember that. Okay. Mace, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah in Abius discusses the question that the Tanoim have a discussion over there about if you have a kazayas of flesh that came from a living person, is it metame or not? And one of the Tanoim over there wants to draw a comparison between a mess, that a kazayas from a mess is metame, so a kazayas from a living person should also be metame. And the Chachamim answered him, loy, not necessarily. Ima marit from a mess, she actually roiva. In the case of a mess, you have certain other dinim that apply. Most of the bones, as we said yesterday, are metame, or roiva, a quarter tav of bones from a mess of metame. The loy tav of rokov, or you have this concept of a spoonful of rokov from a mess is metame. By a living person, none of those things apply. So therefore, in other words, you can't directly compare. All those things. Most of the bones of a living person are not metame. If you touch a living person who has bones in him, obviously you don't become tame. Really, they're the same thing. And Rokov, we're assuming that Rokov is what we're going to focus on over here. But the assumption is that the Mishnah means to say that Rokov does not apply by a living person. So let's learn the Gemara, and then we'll see. Hechidami, so what are we talking about? The Arkiv Chad Eber? Are you talking about, for example, that let's say while the person was alive, one limb started decaying? Well, then, the Kabasei Gabi Mesa Filu Chad Eber, Iker Rokov. then it sounds like the Mishnah is drawing a parallel, rather the Mishnah is making a distinction. By a living person, that rochav would not be metame, but by a dead person, it would. If even one aver is enough.
After.
Yeah, if the rochav happened after it died. But the point is, you're telling me over here that a mess that's missing something, the concept of rochav does not apply. It seems from that Mishnah on the contrary. Even if only one limb of a mess decays, then even if you only have one limb from a mess and it decays, then rochav applies.
What about Netzel? We're talking about
Netzel. Netzel was yesterday, yeah.
Right. So it's similar to him in terms of...
Netzel had its own din, and that's... They're both metame, but other than that, there's not a lot of comparison between them. No. Netzel, there's no issue of it being mixed with something else. For example, rochav, there's a number of differences.
Here we're saying it's just the font that's missing.
That's what we're saying. That's what we're asking. How can you tell me that if there's a part that's missing, there's no rochav? From that Mishnah in Adius, it sounds like on the contrary. If you only have one individual limb from a mess, and it decayed, and now it turned into rochav, then it's metame. Because you're telling me that one limb of a living person, if one limb of a living person were to decay and turn into dust, it wouldn't be metame. But it sounds like if one limb from a dead person does, then it is. The Gemara answers, yes, mi katani hames. No, that's not what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah did not say the implication is that a mess is different. Hakamash malon. No, what the Mishnah just means, shum mess yesh le rokov. There are certain kinds of mesim where rokov applies. We're not getting the Mishnah is not really getting into the details of when yes and when not. The point is by a mess the concept of rokov applies. Shum chai ein le rokov. Rokov never applies to a living person. That's all the Mishnah is trying to say. It's not trying to say one limb versus the whole body or whatever. It's just saying you want to draw a comparison between a living person and a dead person. As far as a kazayas mosser, there's no comparison. You see that the din is different between the two of them. You can compare the two cases.
When you have a surgical procedure,
Let's try to finish up, and we'll talk about practical halacha questions in a minute. Sorry, Voyrova. What happens if a limb of a person started decaying while he was alive? Because they were a mess, and then later on the person died. Now, what would be the din about it? Do we only say that halacha l'meshum sinai as rakav applies if it decayed after the person died? Or the fact is the person's dead, so maybe that rakav that started while he was alive still counts. Tashma, so come, let's try to prove from that same mission in Adius. You can't compare a mess to a living person. Again, let's assume the mission means time of Mishum Chai. The implication is, why is there no Rokav? Because he's still alive. Which implies once he died, then that limb which started decaying while he was alive does have Rokav. And the answer is no. Mikatani hames? No, because the Mishnah is not explicitly saying, again, about one limb versus not. Hokamash malon, the shum mes yesh lo rokov, shum chai en lo rokov. Same answer as previously. The Mishnah is just saying, as a general rule, a living person never has rokov as long as they're alive. We're not getting into what happens if it decays while they're alive and then they died, whereas certain mason have rokov.
Is it also Netzel?
No, so Netzel, we didn't talk about Netzel from a living person, but from Hashkas, there's no such thing. I guess we assume there's no such thing, but, yeah.
So.